offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Sai Prakash. We are in the third episode of the Shravanam Mananam series. We've started it all over again. We did the 1990 Samuko series the last time we were here, and we've taken up the 91 series. We've just started the first discourse. We've played about three clips. We had the company of Professor Sudhir Bhaskar in the past two episodes, the starting two episodes. Today we are on our own, so we're back to our usual format of Sai Prakash and myself here, with of course Swami being the main participant of our program, if I could put it that way. So before we begin to summarize what we've gone through and what we're going to be looking at today in this program, I invite Sai Prakash to join me. Sairam Sai Prakash.
Sairam Prem. Yes, as you just mentioned, it's wonderful being here, and although it ties the tongue at times, it's still wonderful because we are the first students, and we listen to Swami as our listeners to him. Listeners also listen to him. And again, this is a plea to everybody that if there are a few points which you think we could include in our discussion, you could always mail them to us so that we will go through them and then bring them up in the next week's discussion.
Absolutely. And as you've mentioned it many times, definitely we are the first listeners, first learners of whatever we are speaking about in this program. It reminds me of what one of my teachers would say. You know, in the hostel you have this tradition of having a room leader for every room.
Right.
One of the senior boys becomes the room leader.
Mm-hmm.
And so the teachers would tell them, you know, you'll have to speak to the students and tell them these are the do's and don'ts. Sometimes some students would say that, sir, I can't tell them this because I'm guilty of not following it myself.
That's right.
Right. And the teachers would tell them that's precisely why you should tell it to them.
Okay.
Because the moment you commit to words, it becomes a very strong reminder for yourself.
Correct.
That these are the things which Swami likes, and these are the things which have to be followed. So I think many times during the course of the program, we listen to some things from Swami's discourses which probably, not probably, always are strong messages for both of us here.
Very true.
So for that, we're really, really grateful to Swami for this program, and grateful to the listeners who have, you know, given us such encouragement.
Very true.
For us
Very
to
true.
Come back. I don't think we would have had the guts to do this otherwise. Just that, you know, one of the listeners were sharing, they were saying that, you know, there is a sense of, you both sometimes sound so lost, so you feel a sense of camaraderie with you.
That's a fact, because when we listen to some of these truths being spoken with so much love, I mean, it's almost like getting access to something which is so inaccessible. You know, there is this fountainhead of knowledge sitting high up in a mountain, and if we were to climb up the mountain and reach up to him and try to get some knowledge from him, I don't know how many of us would have actually gone up. But here is Swami who has come down for us and taking us to the very heights of knowledge. So the experience is really amazing. And very frankly, when I listen to some of these clips, just closing my eyes, I can actually visualize Swami standing there, you know, on the stage in the Vrindavan auditorium where most of the summer courses took place, and you know, leaning slightly forward with both his hands resting on the table. I really am not sure if we have the video of the 1991 summer course series, but 1990 we do have.
Right.
And you know, yes, listening to the audio is one thing, reading the text is one thing, listening to the audio is one thing, but when you actually see him speak, it's so amazing. It's like, you know how a child would sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, or how a professor in mathematics would, you know, teach addition and subtraction to a school child. Swami is just with that amount of ease, with that amount of spontaneity, with that amount of, you know, love, just sharing. It's almost as if he is just passing it on through him. It's just coming through him. It's like he's a source. the source, and he is using his body to convey this message. You don't see any amount of planning. You don't actually see him between the time he's given, between the translator's voice, thinking, oh, what should I say next? There's absolutely no preparation. It's so spontaneous.
Right. And one of the images which very strong for me is, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes Swami's message is so strong, straightforward, and very powerful.
Yeah.
You can see that intensity on Swami's face, you know.
Correct.
That anger.
The anguish as well.
Anguish is a better word.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when the translator takes over, Swami would smile.
Correct.
Right, and then he would take on, and again there would be that intensity on his face. And then again, when the translation is going on, Swami would look at the boys and smile.
You know, typical manasekam, vachasekam, karmanekam, mahatmanam. Because when he is uttering those words, he is 100% involved. He completely believes in what he is saying. And he is completely speaking from, I can't call it experience, but it is definitely quote-unquote experience. Like what he himself has gone through in his life and what he's teaching us. He has followed everything that he has spoken of. And so that gives it its power. And then when Swami speaks a particular statement, he is 100% involved in it. And this is something very beautiful even on other days. You know, if Swami is again quote-unquote upset with somebody and Swami is giving him a sound blasting, you know, Swami would do it in great style and in the, you know, presence and in the hearing view of hundreds of students, be it a student or a teacher or a professor. But again, that is his love. But there is something very unique you would notice. So here he is reprimanding a student, and that student is probably shedding tears and he's saying, Swami, please forgive me. And Swami, no, you didn't do this right. You should not have done this. And then he just turns around and in that split second gives a smile to another student.
Right.
So you see, it's not coming from the heart. I mean, when he is doing it, the intention is that, yes, I should reprimand him for him to improve. The intention is love. The intention is always love. But he found that this kind of sharp words is what is required for this current circumstance. So that's what he would give. And he would just look beside and he would give a smile to the next boy. And that would irk this boy all the more. but that's his love again.
In fact, I was just listening to the interview which was aired, I think, yesterday on our Asia stream.
Okay.
A conversation with Justice Venkatachalaya, who's currently the Chancellor of the university.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a person who is not had much association with Swami or institutions, though he is actually born, I think, a few miles from here.
Okay.
In the Anantapur district, one of the Manepalli or something, one of the towns.
Okay.
But he's not had much association with Swami, a person of, you know, great eminence.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sharing about his experience of being here and having studied the system, some very, very profound thoughts.
Okay.
I think in the course of the program, we'll mention some of them. But one thing he says is, during the convocation address which he had to deliver,
mm-hmm.
he referred to the teachers as acharya. He did not use the word teachers. He said acharyas.
Mm-hmm.
So the interviewer asked him, you know, why did you use the word acharyas? He said, there is a perfect definition for this word acharyas. There is a certain set of people who qualify to be called acharyas.
Very true.
And he says that definition is given by Kalidasa in one of his works.
Uh-huh.
He says an acharya is not just a knowledgeable teacher.
Mm.
An acharya is one who wants to share his knowledge purely based on his love for his student.
Beautiful.
He says purely based on that that concern for the welfare of the student,
mm-hmm.
one who shares his knowledge is an acharya. And he said, when I interacted with teachers here, I could see in them that perfect reflection of what Swami was. Because when Swami spoke, when Swami wrote, mm-hmm. you could see that love with which he wrote, with that concern and that, the sense of emergency which he had in his anguish.
Correct. And also, of course, Swami has mentioned it in some of his discourses. Acharya is acharinchi.
Right.
Bodhinchevadu. Right. Means the one who follows what he is actually preaching. And practice before you preach. I mean, that's how it is. So getting back to the first discourse in this 1991 series, as we had discussed in both the previous episodes, Swami starts with education. And it's almost as if Swami is, again, quote unquote, justifying the purpose of this summer course. And here are students who are in their undergraduate and then late, mid and late teens and early 20s. And they have, all they have with them is a 2-month summer vacation. And then the summer vacation is again cut short because Swami has called them back for a summer course. And here are students who have possibly some of them grumbling, but most of them happy that they are back with Swami, are seated. And what is it that he is having to offer to them on this occasion when they have come back from their, cut short their vacation and come back? Here is something that he is going to offer to them, which is more subtle and which is more important than what they would have learnt from the world or from their parents, from their friends, from whichever places they have come from. And what is it that Swami is giving them? So he defines what is education in the first chapter and starts with that beautiful poem.
Right. And talking about the summer courses, I mean, it's, Gyalis says it is not just for the sake of saying that we said that, you know, students were happy to come back.
Mm.
Because I remember for the first time when we had the summer course, when in my second year undergraduate, the excitement which was there,
mm-hmm.
that real enthusiasm that, you know, because you talk about the Dashara celebrations, you talk about any other festival in Prashandilam. Of course, Swami would often say, Vidyarthulara, when he is speaking.
Correct.
You know, the students would be given an opportunity to play an important role in all of these celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
But all said and done, summer course is 15 days, Swami says it's for you.
Yeah, that's right.
In 15 days, Swami is doing it only for you and Swami is there for you. I think that feeling was so special because, you know, we were all waiting, especially since we had not seen a summer course, that idea that Swami is conducting a summer course.
Yeah.
And Swami is going to take a class every day. You know, each of these discourses which we go through is Swami's period of the summer course.
Very true.
Right?
Very true.
The class which he was taking.
On the lighter side, who can forget those glorious mangoes? You know, we get those huge size mangoes.
Right.
And that's the time of the year when the mangoes are ripe. And which is sweeter, you can't say Swami's discourse or the mango. Definitely Swami's discourse, but.
Right. And going back to this discourse and that Padyam, as we said very beautifully, Swami points out at every aspect of life we chase in the process of acquiring education. You know, when we see why do we acquire education, why do we acquire wealth, Swami points out at everything. You know, he says, you might be brave, you might be wealthy, you might do a lot of charity, you might have immense talent.
Right.
But none of this is important, especially if you don't have control over your body and senses, and if you don't have a steady mind that is turned inward.
Right.
And a selfless heart, right? A firm and selfless heart.
Firm and selfless heart, yeah.
And Swami, in fact, puts it as a challenge. He says that this is the most difficult thing to acquire. You know, all of these things which you think are the purpose of education is quite easily acquirable. What is difficult to acquire and what is necessary to be acquired is these things. A firm heart, a balanced mind, control over body and senses.
Very true. And then Swami starts by saying that a lot of money, a lot of effort, a lot of time is given in discovery and in inventions of science and how we get, you know, the fields of plastics, electronics and computers, atomic power and space research. But he says, what's the use of all this? And are these making you better human beings? Yes, I think here Swami is drawing a line between standard of living and what you think is the purpose of life and redefining what actually is the purpose of life. Probably the, as Swami has told many times, the purpose of life is to go back from where you have come. And you can do that only if you are a better human being. You know, there is a slight digression here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's in Dhyanavahini, Swami very beautifully says that many people try to take up spiritual practices and try to, you know, acquire spiritual, they try to grow spiritually without the basic ingredient or the basic aspect of becoming better human beings. He says that is by itself the sole reason for the, you know, sadhana of many, many people to go down the drain. He says the basic necessity, the first step rather, you know, the first step of a spiritual life is to become a good human being. And he says people have overlooked that. I mean, so as we mentioned in, I think, the previous episode, somebody may have a siddhi, somebody may acquire a spiritual power. I may be able to read minds, I may be able to materialize things from thin air, I may be able to do, you know, light fire with my sight. So what?
In fact, you know, when we are going through the Ramakatha Raswaini as part of the other program, in that we came across this very beautiful and poignant part in the story where Swami speaks of, you know, which is characteristic of Swami's Ramayana. Swami calls Mother Sita and tells her that our mission begins tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to play the drama of the golden deer and Ravana's abduction of you. At that time, you know, Rama says, why do we have to do this?
Oh. No,
very, very strong words. He says, we have to teach the world a lesson that someone like Ravana, you know, who is in the garb of a devotee, but who has not controlled and conquered these vices within, he cannot be a devotee.
Oh.
You have to say, you have to tell to people that, you know, the role of any knowledge, of devotion, of acquiring any skill or wealth, is that you should achieve this basic goodness.
Very true.
And you're never complete without that. And that is the message you have to send to the world. And so we're going to play this drama, he says.
Beautiful. You know, here when Swami talks about science and spirituality, yes, science has made progress. But if we are, you know, looking at the latest frontiers of science, and if you look at areas where science is actually coming to accept consciousness, science is actually, it has to accept. I mean, beyond a particular level, you cannot separate the two. In fact, a little bit of quantum physics, and people who are familiar with Niels Bohr and, you know, the Einstein-Bohr argument. And so there comes a time where everything in creation has a dual nature, or as he said, it's complementary nature. It's a complementary nature. Here is a beautiful quote I would just like to read out. It's by Niels Bohr. He says, this argument looks highly convincing at first. We can admittedly find nothing in physics or chemistry that has even a remote bearing on consciousness. Yet all of us know that there is such a thing as consciousness, simply because we have it ourselves. Hence, consciousness must be a part of nature, or more generally of reality, which means that quite apart from the laws of physics and chemistry as laid down in quantum theory, we must also consider laws of quite a different kind. I mean, if that's the closest a scientist can get to what is Atma and to what is Prajna or consciousness, well, he has gotten there. But even here, I do not really know whether we need greater freedom than we already enjoy, thanks to the concept of complementarity. So the concept of complementarity, he says, you know, there is this paradox of whether electron or light behaves as a particle or a wave, the wave and body, wave and particle duality. Then there is the mind and body duality. So these are some parameters which he has, some examples of complementary properties that Bohr has considered. But the whole point is, there is a time, or there is an extent to which science can go. And beyond that, it has to go inwards. And I mean, that's what Swami brings out so beautifully here. He says, yes, there is growth in science. There is, you know, advances, and it helps you, it facilitates you. But then there is an area beyond which it doesn't go. You have to go inwards.
Right. In fact, I think in Premohini, Swami mentions that, you know, all that you do in the name of science, in the name of technology, is just that you're taking the same few vital things an animal does to live and doing it better.
Right.
You're not doing what it what defines a human nature, what defines a human birth. Mm. You know, you're taking the same thing, you know, an animal sleeps, can I sleep more comfortably? An animal eats, can I eat more variety?
Right.
You know, and in fact, Swami makes that statement, that man is only living like the best animal around.
Yeah. That, in fact, this sentence of Bohr again is so beautiful. He says, I don't know if we should consider laws of quite a different kind, but even here I do not really know whether we need greater freedom than we already enjoy. Greater freedom, I believe, is in the extent to which our senses can perceive. So he's almost driving at the limitation of our senses at perceiving what the actual truth is. I mean, the degrees of freedom is, yes, you are limited by your senses. Then who is, if you are really not limited by your senses, who are you? So I think that is where the esoteric takes over from science.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's more of a pattern. It's more like a saying also in most of Indian languages, that either you should be completely ignorant or you should be completely knowledgeable. What happens when you increasingly gather more knowledge is the feeling of, you know, a rude empowerment, a
rash
feeling of
empowerment. False wisdom, I would say.
Exactly. That's what happens with science, because one of the studies which talks about atheism and theism, they say that, you know, at a point in our history, we had a lot of things to fear. And generally, man tends to adore what he fears.
Okay, okay.
So we made a god out of fire, we made a god out of the sun, we made a god. And the more we started finding scientific explanations for this, there were no more objects which we did not know about. No more objects which we had a fear for.
Yeah.
You know, we might be very far from complete knowledge of any of these objects. I mean, even now we can't define what the sun is completely. We can't define what fire is completely.
Correct.
But that little knowledge makes us feel that now I know it. I don't have to, you know, fear it anymore. I don't need to adore it anymore. How can it be a deity? How can it be fire god or sun god? That kind of a feeling.
Now, so these points which Swami has brought out here, yes, he says, I think in one of these lines he says, the material wealth is necessary, but to what extent? And there has to be a limitation. And then he goes on to give that basically anything that you think is giving you happiness from the material point of view is temporary, and you don't, it's not everlasting. And he quotes the examples of Shivaji and Ramdas. He says they had everything they wanted to. And Janaka says, why did they actually give up everything and go in search of, why did Shivaji go in search of Ramdas and why did Janaka go in search of Yajnavalkya? That is for peace of mind. So,
absolutely. I mean, in fact, if you look at the devotees who came to Swami, I think it's the same thing. You know, we had somebody like James Sinclair come to Swami.
Correct.
There was a point of time when he was the richest man, individual in the world.
Is it?
Apparently, one of the richest.
Wow.
Because he had diamond and gold mines, I believe.
Okay.
So, you know, he says about that moment when he found a huge vacuum in himself. He said, God, if you're there, you have to come to me now.
Right.
So where does that vacuum come from? If money can fill it, if comfort can fill it, if success can fill it, then there is no place for such vacuum in the life of a person like him. Right?
Like, I mean, I heard it from somebody, I don't remember who, but, you know, beyond a particular level of earning money, it's more the power that your mind drags you into.
Right.
Yes, money is there. There is enough money. Now, between, you know, a $10 million and a $20 million, there is no big difference. If you can if you can make $10 million, you're going to make $20
million. We have that saying, it takes effort only for the first million.
First million, that's right.
After that, it multiplies.
Multiply. But then again, it's power. So it's like different degrees of, you know, bindings that bind you. You are bound by the need to feel powerful. You are bound by the need to feel rich. I mean, that's how it
probably is. Probably explains why politicians go on hunger strikes.
They don't have much of it. So then Swami moves on to say that yes, there is a lot of values that have been forgotten, and students are actually converting their heads into books. I mean, he says the education today is quite blind. It's not focusing on what it ought to do in terms of enriching life, and education is for life, not for living, as Swami says. And how to go about it in daily life, he says, then fear of sin, love for God and morality in society. That comes out very beautifully. He says, Deva Preeti, Papa Bhiti and Sanganiti.
Right. And then of course Swami goes on to say that beautiful play of words which always Swami uses, Akara Manodu and Achara Manodu.
Yeah.
Be a man in reality, in practice, mm-hmm. rather than just in the form. Then the other word which Swami uses in that discourse clip is very beautiful. Manvata viluva, Swami says.
Human values.
The values of human, what, you know, when you talk of currency, you talk of gold, you talk of any precious gems.
Mm-hmm.
Swami would often say this, all the value that it has is the value that you give to it.
Right.
Right. And Swami says human values, if you remove the values, there is no, you know, value for the human birth at all. And Swami says that that's the important thing, to go back, to use even education, even secular education, to go back to that human values.
Yeah. That, and then he says that, you know, all the values, you know, education is important, but education imbued with integrity. People, you know, filled with integrity is what is important. And then that, what they learn, should culminate in behavior. I found that a very powerful statement.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know what is right and wrong, but if you choose not to act on what is in line with what is right, then you're as good as not knowing what is right and wrong.
Right. So I think till here it was a quite a general introduction.
Yeah.
Then Swami goes to the specifics.
Yes.
Now, this point is of course directly applicable to most education institutions, where Swami says, education and a job must be disjoined. Education should be for life, not for a living. I think this can be practically put into practice in an educational institution.
Right.
I think, I mean, even if every premier institution in the country decides to drive this lesson to the students,
right,
that education is not for a job,
you know,
there is something more you have to take out of an education, I think the change it would bring is
tremendous.
Would be enormous.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, the whole idea of Swami standing there and speaking to, he would say, Vidyarthulara, Vidya Bodhakulara, and you know, patrons of education. But
right.
He is the only master who is actually teaching the true kind of education that has to be taught. And in some of these sentences, Swami has been very, very powerful. As we rightly said, you know, there's a lot of anguish in his voice. And he says, this is the sorry state of affairs the world is going into. And you know, listening to this and talking on his discourses, that beautiful poem comes to my mind. You know, I think it's in Satya Sai Speaks, in one of the
right, Satya Sai in the first volume.
Oh, is it?
The first volume begins with that beautiful poem by Professor Kasturi. I think he covers everything that can be told about Swami's discourses.
About the discourse.
Right.
And you know, it's so amazing. He says it's for you, you and you.
And every you.
And every you. I mean, the
for
words are
every
really...
Arjuna, for every Arjuna in you.
So, I mean, that poem really describes all the aspects of what Swami's discourse means, all the ways in which a discourse of Bhagawan can be described. I think we have a recording of...
Right. In fact, we happened to stumble upon this, in fact, because this was... a video which was made for one of the international conferences of the Sai organization. I think some East European conference or something.
Uh-huh.
We happened to see this video and we requested them that we would like to share it on the website. And this entire poem was rendered by, in the voice of the legendary singer Dana Gillespie.
Oh.
She renders it beautifully. I mean, it's an understatement. Dear listeners, we will play that poem for you.
Yes.
It's beautiful and very, very soothing background music. And you would see how wonderfully she has rendered it. And I think we did a very lame attempt at rendering this, I mean, sharing passages from this poem when we did the first episode of Shravanam Mananam Nirdejasanam.
Oh, did we actually
read
it out?
Just a few passages.
Okay.
But I hope our listeners have forgotten it, because this one is simply superb. So today we're going to listen to that entire poem rendered by Dana Gillespie.
Have you heard of Baba speak at public meetings anywhere? He never calls it speech, nor will you name it so. He does not raise his voice, harangue, or rouse the mob, or rail or fail. He does not hesitate, he will not calculate, hum and haw and pause and ponder, making you wonder why you came. He does not waver, wander, collecting thoughts, contriving notes. He does not waste a moment, decorating thoughts in showy lace and frills, clothing borrowed texts in shimmering gauze. He is no orator pompous, proud, clamoring for claps, publicity mad. He will not circumambulate, declaim, or even speak. He is the rain cloud, bringing life to the parched ones here below. He talks to you and you and every single you that has gathered there. To every single Arjuna with heavy heart and empty hand, afraid to fight the battle of life unto victory, you feel he has come for you, to you. You see him silently looking around, the searchlight eye full circle swings. How lucky you are there. He smiles. He wins you by that smile. You scarce can take your eyes from that face, so alluring, so divine. You scarce can pull your heart from off his grip. The clasp is cool comfort. The silence deepens. Though thousands have been squatting, waiting for hours and hours, Himalayan stillness, twilight calm. Prema Swarupala, the golden hour has come. Heaven's gate ajar. The voice is sweet as honey, hived by heavenly bees from Parijata trees. His call is clarion clear. Oh, tis thrilling, tis filling rapture in the soul, flowing like the Ganga, freeing the bound, yielding rich reaping for just ploughing and sowing, welling and swelling like Gersopa Falls, yielding vast power for just wheeling and wiring. His talk is a cascade so limpid and pure, teaching, never preaching, unraveling all knots, stilling the questionings ere they merge in mind, defining, refining, consoling the pining, commanding, yea demanding the bending of pride, sparing no one, be he ruling or serving. Chiding, reprimanding the fool and fanatic, joking and coaxing, poking fun at all hoaxing, quoting from what he said in the past ages, detailing facts of his incarnating. Resplendent poetry, spontaneous, sublime, painting pictures of transcendental truth, parable, proverb, scintillating bright, tinkling, twinkling, tintinambulating lilt, every hour a minute, every minute a second, every word a mantra, every phrase sutra, a Gayatri a sentence, Upanishad a speech. For he is no well or tank or river, his is the ocean of wisdom divine. Oh, his words shower mercy like morning dew on every heart bud awakening from dreaming. He is feeding your roots and speeding the sap, sprouting the buds, painting the petals, perfuming them well, inviting the bees, ripening the pods with each word of his. There, the meaning of his word, a tiny seed, drops on your rock-like heart, And wonder of wonders, it germinates there, sprouts and puts forth leaves. The silken half-blind baby roots do run about, tickling the stone, jabbing, pleading for suckling, succeeding at last, it grows. And growing into a tree, your rock is broken into clay. His talk, you will find, is cooling, not freezing, warming, not burning, raining, not flooding, healing the ailing and hearts bewailing, soothing, not searing, no toxing, but tonic, balming and calming, all fact and no fiction. Every sentence spreads joy and scorches gloom, impelling attention, compelling assent, dispelling dejection, repelling sloth, attracting you nearer, detaching from bonds, infusing courage, infusing creeds, imposing no doctrine, composing all feuds, informing, so charming, never harming, disarming, sifting the responding, lifting the desponding, stressing on doing, behaving and living, appealing for feeling, believing and acting, calling all listening to spurn imitating, vainly disputing, blind leading the blind, knocking at paradise through power and pelf, or boasting of branches of family tree, and seeking for peace in earning and spending and wanting and panting and hoarding and guarding. As you hear him talking, you quietly resolve to take a step forward on the pilgrim road. Unfold your wings and soar into the sky. You feel you are a lion, cheated into bleating, a diamond set in dirty lead. Engaging in no fray, enraging no foe, he is welcoming all who are thirsty or starving or limping or blinking or climbing and sliding, raising the stooping, embracing the drooping, assuaging pain, assuring his grace. He reminds us all of the road we have missed. He describes the joy of the journey's end. He opens our eyes. He strengthens our limbs. He hardens the struggling, groping his way, awakening the sleeping, making the sitting stand, the standing to walk, the walking to reach. Proclaiming, revealing, announcing to all, asserting his coming for our burden assuming, redeeming the wayward, the downcast, diseased, underlining the truth, undermining the false. Ah, what is this? What luck, what grace! Even as he talks, it blossoms into song. Oh, captivating song! He teaches us to pray, tranquilizing all the furious waves, steeling the nerves, strengthening the will, attuning our soul to Dharma, Satya, Prema. And when it stops and you open your eyes, you will find them full of tears. Your neighbor weeps like child for mother, but why? Look up and see, he has left the dais. Be proud you had the chance. From this moment, I know you are bound to be ascending, attempting, adventurous soul. Arjuna resuming arms for the fray, with Krishna leading the horses aright. How lucky you heard him talk.
No, no, what to say. Beautiful. And in fact, even as those words were being rendered, so much of the discourse we are going through is actually summarized in that. You know,
yes,
many of the points
right.
which we see
yeah,
here, you know,
right.
about pretense, about you know, the idea of trying to earn a berth in heaven through power and through education and learning.
And I mean, the perfect instrument, I would say, Professor Kasturi.
Beautiful, definitely.
And I mean, why should we speak at all after this?
Beautiful, beautiful, and so very soulfully rendered by Dana Gillespie.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I think in one of Satisai Speaks, one of the chapters, if I'm not mistaken, he says sambhashanam, not like upadesham. It's not, he says, my discourses are sambhashanam. They are a conversation. It's not just a teaching. It's not just a discourse. It's a conversation. He converses with the actual you. He's not conversing with you as you think you are, but with the actual you he's conversing.
In fact, I think in one of our discussions, we had come up with this, there was a quote we had read somewhere. And a learned person, an intelligent person or a person of immense knowledge,
okay,
if you ask him a question, he can give you answers for your question. But it takes a master to answer you.
Oh.
Because the questions can be common.
Correct.
But you never know what is the intention or what is the pain or what is the confusion behind the question itself.
Right.
And that's why many times when Swami gives an answer to, you know, you would be sitting there, one of the boys asks a question or a devotee asks a question, sometimes you might not be able to relate to the answer because that answer is not an answer to the question, but it's an answer to the person who is asking the question.
In fact, on the lighter side, when Swami, my leg is paining, cut it and throw it in Chitravati, he would say. He would say, this is Satya Sai Baba whose every word is based on truth. And he says, cut it and throw it in Chitravati. But what does it mean? I mean, it's the ultimate truth. Everything he spoke is based on that ultimate truth.
One of the devotees say, you know, there's this person who comes for darshan and he's a sadhaka basically, and he's on his pilgrimage. He comes to Swami. He's waiting. Swami does not speak to him. And everybody is, you know, feels bad for him because he seems to be a very sincere sadhaka. And you know, sometimes you feel, you know, Swami is speaking to all the other people and here is a real aspirant.
Yeah.
You know, and Swami, you listen to Swami's discourse. This person seems to be a perfect description which Swami is giving there in the discourse.
Right.
Swami doesn't speak to him. And apparently after one particular darshan, this person comes out and he's jubilant. He said, he says, I've got my message. I can leave now. He says, but Swami never spoke to you. He said, no, when Swami was coming along, I got up and I was so desperate. So today I thought I'll ask Swami. Swami said, kurcho, kurcho, kurcho.
Wow.
And he said, the moment Swami said that, I realized that Swami is telling me, don't be so desperate. Do what you're supposed to do and be where you are. It'll come to you.
Automatically come to you. My God.
And he said, yeah, this is all I need to know. This is what I was waiting for. Swami has given me the message.
So beautiful. So beautiful.
Right.
Dear listeners, I think it is time we should listen to Swami's voice and at least play one clip in this session of Shravanam Mananam Vidhyasana.
So this is the fourth clip, but before that, I think one of our listeners had once asked us where to find this poem. So if anybody is wondering, this is in the first volume of Satisai Speaks. Again, you can find it online in ssbpt.info. If you go to the first volume, first chapter, this poem will be found there. Going out of the discourse, we are in the discourse which was delivered on 20th May 1991, and this is the fourth clip of that discourse.
Manam sampadana 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 kaadu pradhanam samskaram chala pradhanam.
We are concentrating only on earning. What is the use of earning?
Manam samskaram anipidi ee naadu poorthi adugunti poyinadi.
The samskaras are not at all cared for today. They are destroyed completely.
Mana jeevitam ante kudunu dhanamu dhanamu dhanam. Emiti ee dhanam?
What is this money which we are caring so
dhanamu
much for?
Dhanamu atyavasarame.
Money is essential.
Kani mitimira dhanamu matihani kalpistundi.
Excessive money will make people go crazy.
Nenu aneka paryalu cheptuntanu pillalaku.
I tell students
nichya jeevitamunaku avasaramainatundi dhanamu manam sampadinchukovali.
You should earn as much money as is necessary for our daily life.
Nasreyo niyamam vina. Niyamame lekapothe manaku shreyasse ledu.
There is no welfare without limits and regulations.
Mana body lopala 98.4 temperature ఉంటుంటది.
In our physical body, the temperature is
98.4.
If it becomes 99 degrees, then he will have developed a fever.
అదే విధముగానే మన యొక్క ఐబాల్ లోపల కూడా ఎంత వెళ్తున్నో అంత మాత్రమే చూడగలదు.
సిమిలర్లీ అవర్ ఐస్ కెన్ సీ ఓన్లీ దట్ మచ్ ఆఫ్ లైట్.
ఇది మితిమీరినటువంటి లైట్ చూసేటప్పటికి రెటీనా బర్న్ అయిపోతుంది.
ఎక్సెసివ్ లైట్ కెన్ బర్న్ ది రెటీనా.
మన బ్లడ్ ప్రెషర్ కూడా 120/80 పర్ఫెక్ట్ నార్మల్ గా ఉంటుంది.
అవర్ బ్లడ్ ప్రెషర్ ఆల్సో మస్ట్ బి 120/80.
దీనికి ఏమైనా కొంచెం మీరిపోయిందంటే ఏదో ఒకటి హార్ట్ ట్రబుల్ ప్రారంభమైంది.
If it exceeds or falls
short, అదే విధముగానే మానవునికి ధనం కూడా అవసరమే.
సిమిలర్లీ మ్యాన్ నీడ్స్ మనీ.
నిత్య జీవితానికి పనులపైన ఆధారపడకుండా తన యొక్క జీవితాన్ని తాను గడుపుకునేటువంటి దీంట్లో ధనం అవసరమే.
మనీ ఈజ్ రిక్వైర్డ్ ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ దట్ వన్ మే నాట్ డిపెండ్ అపాన్ అదర్స్ ఫర్ లివింగ్ ది డైలీ లైఫ్.
కానీ ఈనాటి విద్యావంతులు ఈ ధన నిమిత్తమై పడేటువంటి పాటలు చూస్తే చాలా ఆశ్చర్యంగా ఉంటాయి.
వన్ ఈజ్ సర్ప్రైజ్ అండ్ అస్టానిష్డ్ వెన్ వన్ సీస్ ఎన్ ఎడ్యుకేటెడ్ మ్యాన్ హౌ మచ్ హిస్ ఆస్పైర్ టు ఎర్న్ మనీ.
చదువు లేనటువంటి యొక్క పల్లె మనిషి ఎందుకు ఒక త్యాగం ఉంది, కానీ చదువుకున్నటువంటి వాడి ఎందుకు త్యాగమే లేదు.
వన్ కెన్ సీ సాక్రిఫైస్ అండ్ హెల్ప్ఫుల్ నేచర్ ఇన్ అన్ ఎడ్యుకేటెడ్ విలేజర్ బట్ నాట్ ఇన్ అన్ ఎడ్యుకేటెడ్ మ్యాన్ హూ ఇస్ టోటల్.
ఎక్కడ విద్యా సంస్థలు అధికంగా పెరుగుతున్నాయో,
వేరెవర్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్ ఇన్స్టిట్యూట్,
ఎక్కడ న్యాయశాస్త్రములు అధికంగా పెరుగుతున్నాయో,
వేరెవర్ లా కోర్ట్స్ ఆర్ ఇంక్రీజ్,
అక్కడనే అవిద్యలు అన్యాయములు అక్రమములు అనాచారములు అధికంగా పెరిగిపోతున్నాయి.
దేర్ ఓన్లీ ఆల్ సార్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ రాంగ్ థింగ్స్ ఆర్ హ్యాపెనింగ్.
ఏ విద్యా సంస్థలు ఏ న్యాయస్థానములు లేనటువంటి యొక్క కారణములు ఎందుకు కాని పల్లెలు ఎందుకు కాని మానవులు ఏదో అంతో ఇంతో సహజ జీవితాన్ని గడుపుతున్నారు.
ఇఫ్ యు టేక్ విలేజెస్ ఆర్ ఫారెస్ట్, మ్యాన్ ఈజ్ లివింగ్ ఏ న్యాచురల్ లైఫ్, నాట్ ఎన్ ఆర్టిఫిషియల్ ఆర్ హార్మ్ఫుల్ లైఫ్.
ఈనాడు దేశమంతా కూడాను ఇంత దిగదారుగా కారణం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఈస్ ది రీజన్ ఫార్ సచ్ ఎ ఫాల్?
విద్యార్థుల యందు మితిమీరినటువంటి ఒక ఆశలు పెరిగిపోతున్నాయి.
ఎ గ్రోత్ ఆఫ్ ఎక్సెసివ్ డిజైర్స్ ఇన్ స్టూడెంట్స్ ఈజ్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్ దిస్ స్టేట్.
లెస్ లగేజ్ మోర్ కంఫర్ట్. ఈ బాధ్యతలు క్రమక్రమేణా తగ్గించుకోవాలి.
Reduce your desires and responsibilities.
ధనం అనేటువంటిది మన కాళ్ళకు వేసుకునేటువంటి షూస్ వంటిది.
మనీ మే బి కంపేర్ టు షూ విచ్ వి వేర్.
ఆ షూస్ కాళ్ళకు కరెక్ట్ గా ఉంటుంటే చక్కగా నడుస్తాం.
ఇఫ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ అ కరెక్ట్ సైజ్ షూ ఇట్ ఇస్ కంఫర్టబుల్ టు వాక్.
కొంచెం లూజ్ గానే ఉంటే కూడా మనం నడచలేము.
ఇఫ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ అ లిటిల్ లూజ్ యూ విల్ ఫైండ్ ఇట్ డిఫికల్ట్ టు వాక్ విత్ ఇట్.
టైట్ గా ఉంటే కూడా మనం నడచలేము.
If it is tight also, it causes inconvenience.
అధిక ధనము కాని తక్కువ ధనము కాని మానవునికి కొంచెం బాధను కలిగిస్తుంది.
దేర్ఫోర్ మ్యాన్ ఈజ్ ఇన్కన్వీనియంట్ ఇఫ్ దెర్ ఈస్ ఎక్సెసివ్ మనీ ఆర్ షార్టేజ్ ఆఫ్ మనీ.
అవసరమైనంత ధనం మాత్రమే మనకు కావాలి.
వీ షుడ్ కీప్ యాజ్ మచ్ మనీ యాజ్ ఈస్ నెసరీ ఫర్ అస్.
అప్పుడే మానసిక శాంతి మనకు లభ్యమవుతుంది.
దెన్ ఓన్లీ విల్ హ్యావ్ ఫుల్ పీస్.
మన శాంతి మన ఇందే ఉంటున్నది కానీ బయట లేదు.
Mental peace is within ourselves.
ఎన్ని చదువులు చదివినా ఏమి ప్రయోజనం?
What is the use of your learning?
ఎంత చదువులు చదివినా ఏమి ఫలము? తన్ను సతరాత తప్పించని ఎవరితరం?
What ever education you acquire, what is the use? Who can change what is written?
చెడ్డ బుద్ధులు తన తల చేరేనేని ఎండబారును బుద్ధులు వెండుబారు.
If wrong ideas were to enter into your head, you go dry.
ఈనాటి చదువులు చదువులు చదువులనగా కేవలము ప్రపంచంలో జరిగేటువంటి విషయాలంతా కూడా తనలో చేర్చుకోవడం కాదు చదువులు.
When you say education, it is not to fill your head with all sorts of information about the world.
లోక సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు. అందరి క్షేమము ఉండినప్పుడే నీ క్షేమం కూడా అందులో చేరి ఉంటుంటుంది.
When you aspire for the welfare of the entire world, your welfare is also taken care.
ఈనాటి విద్యావంతులు కేవలము తన యొక్క వ్యక్తిత్వాన్ని తన యొక్క కుటుంబాన్ని మాత్రమే దృష్టి అందించుకుంటున్నారు. సమాజం యొక్క చింతన ఏమాత్రమూ చేయటం లేదు.
టుడేస్ ఎడ్యుకేటెడ్ మ్యాన్ ఈజ్ కాన్సన్ట్రేటింగ్ ఆన్ ద వెల్ఫేర్ ఆఫ్ హిస్ ఫ్యామిలీ అండ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ అలోన్. హీ డజంట్ కేర్ ఫర్ ద సొసైటీ.
సమాజమే లేకపోతే మనం ఎక్కడ ఉంటున్నాం?
ఇఫ్ దెర్ ఇస్ నో సొసైటీ, వేర్ ఆర్ యు?
మన జీవితం అంతా సమాజంతో కట్టుబడి ఉంటుండాలి.
అవర్ ఎంటైర్ లైఫ్ ఈజ్ ఇంటిగ్రేటెడ్ విత్
సమాజం. క్షేమంగా ఉండినప్పుడే మన క్షేమం.
వెన్ సొసైటీ ఈజ్ సేఫ్, we are safe.
కానీ ఈ సత్యాన్ని విద్యావంతుడు గుర్తించడానికి ప్రయత్నించడం లేదు.
బట్ టుడేస్ ఎడ్యుకేటెడ్ మ్యాన్ doesn't seem to recognize
మానవుని ప్రయాణం అనేటువంటిది వ్యక్తి కుటుంబము సమాజము మూడింటి ద్వారా మనం ప్రయాణం చేయాలి.
మ్యాన్ హ్యాస్ టు ట్రావెల్ త్రూ ది ఇండివిజువల్ ద సొసైటీ అండ్ ది నేషన్
ఫ్రమ్ ఐ టు వి ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క జీవితాన్ని మనం చేసినప్పుడు నిరంతరం కూడా ఐ ఏమిటి ఐ.
ఇఫ్ యూ డ్రౌన్ యువర్ సెల్ఫ్ ఓన్లీ విత్ దిస్ ఐ
రెండు రకములైన ఐలు ఉంటున్నాయి ఇక్కడ.
దేర్ ఆర్ టూ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ ఐ.
వన్ లెటర్ ఐ ఈజ్ వన్
వన్ ఈజ్ వన్ లెటర్ ఐ
త్రీ లెటర్ ఐ ఈవైఈఐ త్రీ లెటర్స్ ఐ ఈజ్ వన్
ది సెకండ్ వన్ ఈజ్ త్రీ లెటర్ ఐ
త్రీ లెటర్ ఐ ఈజ్ బాడీ
త్రీ లెటర్ ఐ ఈజ్ బాడీ
One letter I is self.
One
is soul.
That is soul.
Neevu body kaadu.
You are not the body.
Body neeku oka instrument.
It is only an instrument.
Mind neeku oka instrument.
Mind also is only
an instrument. Senses neeku oka instrument.
Senses are also
an instrument. Neeku sahayam chesukoni ee soul. Ekachchalamaina ayini neevu aadharam chesukovali.
You have to base your life on one letter I, but use all the other things as instruments.
Kratta vidyarthulantappudu nu indulo praveshinchali.
Quite a few new students have joined us.
Vidyarthulara, tellavari modalu ratri parundunnanta varaku kodanu I. This is my house, my car, my pen, my shirt, my book, anni my. Who are you?
Dear students, from the day break till you go to bed, you go on using the word my body, my kerchief, my things.
This is my body.
When you say my body, who are you?
This is my mind.
My mind.
This is my hand.
My hand.
This is my leg.
My leg.
But who am I?
Then the question is, who am I?
ఈ క్వశ్చన్ వేసుకునేటువంటి విద్యార్థులు ఎక్కడ కనిపించడం లేదు.
It is difficult to come across students who put this place.
This is my body means my is separate from body.
When you say this is my body, you are different from the body.
But who are you?
Then who are you?
God. See, my body means body is separate from my.
When you say it is my body, your body is separate
ఈ సత్యాన్ని మనం గుర్తించుకున్నప్పుడే నిజమైనటువంటి ఆధ్యాత్మికం మనకు కొంతవరకు చెలరేగుతుంది, అభివృద్ధి గాంచుతుంది.
ఓన్లీ వెన్ వీ రియలైజ్ దిస్ ట్రూత్ వుడ్ హావ్ అండర్స్టూడ్ స్పిరిచువాలిటీ ఇన్ ఇట్స్ బేసిక్ సెన్స్.
దట్ వాజ్ ద క్లిప్ అండ్ ఇట్ వాజ్ సో నైస్ టు హియర్ స్వామి సేయింగ్ దట్ దేర్ ఆర్ న్యూ స్టూడెంట్స్ హియర్ అండ్ దెన్ గివింగ్ అన్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్ విచ్ ఇస్ a classic from Swami's discourses. Probably there must have been some students who were sitting there thinking that Swami, we've heard all this before.
Yeah.
And Swami saying there are a lot of new students, so let's repeat it.
I mean, I actually felt that as I was hearing this portion, because said, Swami, this body, senses and mind, that was 1990 summer course. And now we are in 1991. But then that infinite patience with which Swami again and again reiterates the truth.
Yes. In fact, when we were talking about the sports meet,
mm-hmm.
one of the students were sharing that this particular event of the march past,
yeah.
that doesn't change at all. You know, you might put all kinds of colored clothes and do the marching, but it's still the same marching with so many contingents coming. And, you know, they all come to the stage. Swami will be sitting on the dais and they do that ice rite.
Mm.
Seeing it once a year is, you know, can take quite a toll on you. But Swami would see it multiple times every year because he would come for practice sessions, sometimes 2-3 practice sessions of the, you know, the marching. And when asked, Swami said this, you know, Swami, how come you are able to see the same march past year after year? And Swami showed an expression of surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but the students are different.
Wow.
You know, the feelings with which the students do is the same, but still Swami is responding to a different batch of students, some new students.
So amazing.
You know, and Swami says, the students are new. Mm. So let me share this again. And of course, that particular example, I very freshly remember in my mind
mm-hmm.
when I heard that for the first time, Swami saying, this is my handkerchief. Dropping it and saying, I am different from my handkerchief.
Yeah.
So when I say, this is my body, it is such a simple and striking example and very beautiful every time Swami mentions it.
Right. In this clip, I think Swami starts with saying that samskara, that is, you know, refinement as we would otherwise define it, is more important than sampadana, that is earning of wealth. So, you know, this is something which is best told by Swami. You know, if you take his own life, here is somebody who had no bank account all through his life. And here is somebody, for those who have actually seen the room in which Swami actually lived for a long time, about 40-45 years, is just an 8x10 room. Like, these are things which money can buy you. It can buy you a big room, it can buy you some comforts, it can buy you. But then here Swami is saying that samskara or refinement is more important. So I mean, yes, money is important to the extent it's needed, but Swami through his life has shown that that kind of refinement is what is actually.
And in fact, even as you were saying about there are some needs in the human birth which transcend just money and comfort and some of these things. In fact, one of the social studies which have been done, they say at some point, very early in this pursuit for money, mm-hmm. the driving force changes from basic comforts and basic things which you can buy with money. There is that strong need to be accepted in the higher strata of society.
Okay.
That you feel that I want to belong to that class. Mm. I want to become an elitist. I want to become a little more, there's another niche group which I want to get into.
Mm.
And very often you would see that what differentiates, one class from the other is, apart from the luxuries, apart from the monetary reasons, mm-hmm. it is this culture, which Swami would say. Culturally,
right,
you're different.
Right.
That Sanskriti, which Swami would often say, that politeness, that courtesy in the way you carry yourself.
Surprisingly, I very vividly remember that Sanskriti was a major topic in the first discourse of the 1990 series.
First discourse.
Remember, I even remember the examples of rice and husk, which Swami says.
The metal becoming a watch.
Exactly. He says that is refinement.
Right.
And again, the first discourse of this series, Swami says, talks about refinement.
Right. And of course, from there he goes on to probably the third or fourth discourse of the 1990 Samukha series, where Swami defined the senses with one of the terminology which is used to depict senses called matraha.
Right.
That which, has a certain measure.
Right.
And the same examples, that of body temperature, that of the ability of the eye to see limited brightness, and some of these things. And Swami says, similarly, even there is a limit on how much you can earn and how much you can fill your life with money too.
Mm-hmm.
And after a certain point, it does more harm than it can do good.
Right.
And here Swami is talking about the number of educated, the more educational institutions come up in a society, there seems to be a fall in
the basic values.
In fact, I was referring to that interview with the current chancellor of a university, Justice Venkatachalaya. He makes an observation that a statistic that he gives in 2006, I was really shocked to hear this number. In 2006, there were 19,000 colleges in India.
Okay,
that was the figure. In 2012, there are 46,000.
Wow.
He says there is an unbelievable blast in the number of educational institutions, and he says we are not prepared for this. We have not prepared good teachers, we have not prepared good administrators for this. And when you see that, these many institutions have come without the right perspective towards education.
That's right. And people still get their degrees and they still get their certificates.
Absolutely. And, in many discourses, Swami says, I would not blame the youth. They're not being given the right direction. They're not being, a good example is not being set for them. You can really see that.
That's true. I mean, and as always, Swami's actions speak louder than his words, because here is an institution, here is a university where he has set the ground rules straight. And he says, yes, what you study, that may be important for your living, but this is what you need for life.
Right. And of course, as we said, that point where Swami speaks about the separation between the body and the thing. And before that, of course, Swami makes a beautiful point that, the moment you strive for the happiness of everybody around, approach your own happiness. Swami doesn't say that don't seek to be happy. But if you approach your happiness with this idea that if everyone around is happy, I can be happy. And that is a way in which, education automatically gets purified if you approach with that kind of an perspective.
In fact, I'm sure we are running out of time. But maybe I would just like to conclude this session with a paragraph from Rabindranath Tagore's essay on education.
Okay.
And it's something we can discuss on, you know, start of the next session with.
Right.
But the words are so beautiful. He says, "On each race is the duty laid to keep alight its own lamp of mind as its part in the illumination of the world. To break the lamp of any people is to deprive it of its rightful place in the world festival. He who has no light is unfortunate enough, but utterly miserable is he who, having it, has been deprived of it or has forgotten all about it. India has proved that it has its own mind, which has deeply thought and felt and tried to solve according to its light the problems of existence. The education of India is to enable this mind of India to find out truth, to make this truth its own wherever found, and to give expression to it in such a manner as only it can do." I mean, there's a lot said in these few sentences.
Right. And we have to go into that in detail. I think probably, as you said, we'll start the next session with that. And
yeah.
Of course, there are some other points which Swami makes here, which will need a lot of deliberation for us to understand, not about sharing the for making other people understand.
That's right.
Right. So that, dear listeners, brings us to the end of this program. As Sai Prakash was saying, we're running short of time. Do join us next week for the continuation of this discourse. As always, with immense gratitude, we offer our effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. Before I conclude, don't go away. Vishu is going to be here for the last segment of the day, outside, inside, deep inside. And today he's going to talk about Saint Thyagaraja, as he told you before we took on. So happy listening. We'll join you again next week.